Good morning, this is Henry Harris, and welcome to the weekly Emunah Teleforum. It is Thursday, July 25th, and today's topic is, what comes first, moods or active thoughts? And we'll explain a little bit more about what that means in just a few minutes, but first a basic review. What is this call about? This is a conversation about Emunah, and it is a mitzvah. It is a mitzvah that we are engaging in to explore the truth about how God runs this world. And in particular, we are focused on the way in which Emunah relates to our psychological experience, about how understanding the single simple truth behind everything has a profound way of simplifying our psychological experience. So here's how that works. We are living in a world in which there looks to be all kinds of independent causes and facts, all kinds of things that are real and pressing and significant. And it's only natural and human to kind of relate to all of the things that are happening or that have happened from our past and our present, things that seem to us to be events that are looming in the future. All of those things can seem and feel to be so easily and naturally causes of our experience of life, the stress that we find ourselves in, the relief that we feel, the sadness, the anger, the resentment, the jealousy, the despair, or all the positives. There's all kinds of things that are unfolding in this world or that have unfolded that seem and feel to me to be direct causes of my experience, of my psychological experience. But if we peer a little bit more closely about what is true, then we know that that can't be. It can't be like that. It can't be that things out there, anything in this world, other than in this moment, other than the magical flow, and even the word flow is a little bit misleading because flow is obviously, we're just using words to refer to something that is formless. We're using words to refer to something that is beyond our capacity to put words to. But there is this magical and mysterious recreating of this world and all that there is in it, moment to moment to moment. There is no existence independent of that flow of energy, which means to say that that's true for the experience inside my heart and mind. There is an unfolding landscape inside my heart and mind that greatly colors, not just great colors, it is the experience that I'm experiencing. I'm having an experience of that divine energy. It's not to say that I'm not also in the presence of events and circumstances and memories and perceptions. I'm in the presence of all those things. It's just that they don't have the direct capacity or the direct power or the direct control over my feeling state. So for example, I am, we've used this metaphor many times, that the metaphor that the Torah uses to refer to our inner world is likened to a heart, that our inner, that we have a physical heart and we have a spiritual heart. Our physical heart is pumping at all times. It's pumping a flow of blood that's responsible to give literally exist, like physical energy and existence to our entire body, all 50 trillion cells. It's distributing a whole beautiful recipe of oxygen and nutrients that literally make every cell continue to function. And not only is it pumping all that healthy, beautiful, life-giving oxygen, it's also pumping the refuse, the waste that comes as a result of the cells making use of that healthy stuff, the CO2 and the other toxins that are literally poisonous. We are continuously pumping, our heart is continuously pumping both the healthy blood as well as the poison-filled blood. And that's the human system. That's the human design. There's nothing dangerous. There's nothing problematic. There's nothing unhealthy about the fact that we flow with both of those flows. And literally, just as those flows occur without my... I'm not flowing those flows. I'm not the author of that flow. I'm the recipient of it. I'm experiencing the effect of it. I can notice it and know about it. I can feel its effect, but I'm not... The fact, no matter how much I know about it, no matter how precise or deep or or careful I get into a knowledge of the description of how that blood flows, how the heart flows in the way it doesn't give me any leverage. I can't manage or stop or start or redirect. I don't have control over the flow of my heart. That's God's doing. He's flowing my heart. Now, if the Torah tells us that we have a physical heart and it says that we should serve the Creator with those physical, with our hearts, it obviously means to use the physical heart as a metaphor. And the metaphor means that we have a spiritual heart, which is to say that we have this beautiful composite of two flows that Hashem is pumping. He's pumping this flow of consciousness that we might refer to in places as the Yetzer HaTov, that which fashions goodness, that which creates a perspective and an understanding of connection, of wholeness, of peace, of trust, of divine blessing. He's flowing that consciousness through us. And we're also pumping, he's also pumping through our spiritual heart a flow of toxins that we might refer to as the Yetzer Hara, which the Talmud tells us Hashem is Mechadesh every day. He renews that flow every moment. And that flow of consciousness feels different. It feels insecure. It feels mistrustful. It feels alone. It feels discouraged. It feels all kinds of things. It's the energy that that animates our heart. And the power of this understanding is to recognize that we aren't our thinking, that we have this kind of profound and deep divine health, right? That just as the body is fundamentally divine and healthy, it flows with both oxygenated and toxin-filled blood. But the body itself is not defined by those things. It's healthy. It's a divine product. So too is our consciousness, something that is divine. It's connected to the divine. It flows with different flows. And as we see that, there's a tremendous capacity for psychological freedom that I come to recognize that the child that's struggling or acting in a certain defiant way, or a spouse that's disagreeable, or boss, or colleague, or neighbor, or financial, all of those things, they're not literally programming my inner world. They're the events in which I'm interacting in a world in which there are events, in which there are circumstances. I'm interacting in a world in which I have memories of my past. But none of those things are actually capable of shaping the experience that I'm having in this moment, because there is only one way a felt experience is animated. There's only one way in which a felt experience is created. And that's the same way that everything is created. And again, the fact that we know this, in the same way that I know how the heart, the physical heart works, it doesn't afford me control over the heart. So too, this emunah, this understanding about the way that the Creator runs our inner world, the way he runs everything, and how this is, of course, relevant to our inner world. The fact that I understand how he is running my inner world, it doesn't afford me control. That's why this is not a technique. Emunah is not a technique. It's a pursuit of truth. It's the pursuit of a deeper understanding of how this world is being created. And that's itself a mitzvah. It is a mitzvah to pursue that understanding. Every moment that I'm involved in seeking this understanding and seeking to clarify and seeking to reflect on this understanding is a tremendous, tremendously valuable endeavor. And it happens to be the case that we are clear that we are well suited to become aligned with this truth, meaning that from the inside out, we are so deeply capable of being aligned with this simple truth, that we have a felt experience of the simplicity of life, that we have a felt experience of this psychological freedom, the realization that I am not at the mercy of the events of this world as it's unfolding, or the events of my past. I'm not at the mercy of those things for my felt experience. I'm having felt experiences. I am. I'm having discomforts. I'm having insecurities. I'm having angers. I'm having optimism. I'm having all kinds of things. I'm having those experiences. It's just that they're not coming from outside or of anything of this world. I'm psychologically free of all of that. Does that mean that I'm literally psychologically free, that I'm master of my own ship? Not really. If I'm psychologically free of all the events of this world, then where is my, what am I beholden to? I'm beholden to God. He is animating my psychological experience and everything else moment to moment to moment. I'm completely and totally 100% standing in His will. His will is animating me and animating everything about me. And the magic and mystery and wonder is that I have this gift called free will. Even as the He's all there is, somehow He afforded me the miracle of being able to stand in a consciousness that can acknowledge that. Everything is in the hands of heaven except the capacity to acknowledge heaven. Hakol bidei shamayim chutz miyirat shamayim. Everything, I'll repeat, everything is in the hands of heaven except the capacity to acknowledge that things are in the hands of heaven. And that's the beginning and the most fundamental job I have in this world. And it really allows me to take steps toward every other job I want. I want Shalom Bayis. We'll start with a truthful foundation. I want peaceful home, a happy parenting life. Start with the foundation of truth. I want creativity and success in business. Start with the foundation. Start with the clarity of where and how the world is operating, because it's going to establish the foundation of foundations. It is the simplicity that allows me to align with reality, and I just flow and function so beautifully when I'm living with clear and truthful premises. So I started the call by saying the question I'm looking to address today is, what comes first, our active thinking or our moods? And I'm meaning to say the divine flow. Let me give you the example of how this plays out. I was speaking with a woman who describes how she awakens in the morning with, typically what shows up in the morning is this extraordinary feeling of accusation and shame about her weight. And it's just really, really debilitating. Like, it's just so loud. It's so kind of merciless and oppressive. And she would love to have that less felt experience of that oppressive, painful thinking. So my question to her was, well, tell me, do you have any kind of movement in that feeling? Like, are there any points in the day where you notice that it's more acute, and then times where it's less acute? And so she pondered that for a moment, and she said, yeah, in fact, just today I noticed later in the afternoon I was feeling lighter and nicer, and I was kind of, you know, it wasn't as painful. I didn't feel the pain of that accusation in the same way. And so I asked her, well, what do you attribute that to? Like, what do you think? Like, did your weight change in the between the morning and the afternoon? She's laughing. No, my weight did not change in the between the morning and the afternoon. So then what did it? Like, what accounted for your shift, your feeling state that was a little bit lighter? She's thought about that for a moment. She said, well, you know what it was? It was because I was more aware of certain blessings in my life. I thought about my children. I thought about some of the nice things going on in my life. I thought about X, Y, and Z, and those things lifted me. So I'm not going to take you through the entire conversation, but I'll just tell you that you know, I asked her permission to question her account of things. You know, can I challenge that, or can I suggest that I think that that's mistaken? And she said, yes. And I said, it seems to me that the blessings that you thought of in the afternoon were no less present in your life in the morning than they were in the afternoon. Your children and your whatever that you were aware of and felt good about, those were present in the world in the morning, and the sense of being overweight that you felt in the morning was no less present in the afternoon. So I'm not clear why you think that it's the thoughts themselves, like the facts of your life, that you have blessings, or alternatively, the facts of your life that you're X amount of pounds over your ideal weight. Like, I don't see that facts and your capacity to think about those facts. Like, that's what her thinking, that's what her understanding was. Like, I thought about these facts. These are facts. I have children. They're blessings. There's good things going on in my life. In the morning, I wasn't as attuned to those facts. And in the afternoon, I was attuned to those facts. There's a fact called I'm X amount of pounds beyond my ideal weight. I was more aware of those facts in the morning and less aware of them in the afternoon. So on a certain level, as far as I'm concerned, you haven't really answered the question, because I don't understand why you inclined toward one set of facts in the morning and a different set of facts in the afternoon. And she pondered that for a moment, and I said, here, can I offer you the following explanation? And I said to her, it seems to me that there's something completely independent of the facts and your ability to think those facts that is really shaping your feeling state. And that is that there is an unconscious, unmanaged energy that is not personal to you. It's not under your control. It's not under your, you know, oversight. That's what I would refer to as divine energy. There is a divine energy that is animating everything in this world. And our Torah teaches us that it animates our inner world, and that there is a variety of flavors to how that animated, that divine energy shows up in our heart, in our spiritual mind's heart. And there are moments, and we're not in control. It's showing up in the way it shows up. So here's what I understood happened. You have a certain hit of divine energy that feels insecure, feels blameworthy. And in that state of mind, and in that level of consciousness that is shaped by the divine energy that is being shown to you, you have, in your misunderstanding about it, a tendency to look around for condemning facts. What's, you know, I have a rotten feeling, there must be something rotten going on that I feel this rotten feeling. Well, what's that? Oh, I'm X pounds over my ideal weight, and I haven't, and I've been that way for X number of years, right? But then, unbeknownst to you, there's flow. Divine energy continues to animate you and everything else in this world, and including your inner state of mind, and your mood lifted. A new energy showed up in your consciousness, and you felt a lighter, more peaceful, kind of expansive state of mind. And in that state of mind, a different set of facts felt closer to you. Oh, I have children, and they're loving, and I have this, and I have that. And the facts didn't change, and your ability to actively think of or focus on those facts wasn't determinant. If I had sat down with you in the morning when you felt shame and said, well, let's focus on ABC, right? So that was not, for those who are just joining, I'm talking about how a person can, I'll just do a quick recap. A woman expressed to me that she has, she felt a very strong shameful feeling in the morning about her being overweight, and she would love to have less shameful feelings. I said to her, "Do you notice that there are times where that feeling is softer? It's not as like there are times where the feeling is more acute and the feeling is less acute." She said, "Yes." What can she tell me? In the afternoon, she noticed that very day that she felt more in touch with blessings. She has children. She has other things going for her. And just cutting to the chase for those joining, what I pointed out to her is that it's not the information. It's not her ability to actively think of the thoughts of the data that allowed her mood to move. That's what it looked like to her. When I asked her what was it that accounted for your feeling, a lighter feeling in the afternoon, she said it's because I was focusing on my blessings. And I said to her, so I don't think that it's the blessings, the information of the blessings, that's actually accounting for your lift in spirits, because the data of your being over or beyond your ideal weight was just as present in the morning as it was in the afternoon, i.e. or just as present in the afternoon as it was in the morning. And the data about your children and the blessings associated with them was just as present in the morning as it was in the afternoon. Rather, there is a divine energy that is shaping a mood independent of the facts of your life, the facts of the circumstances of your life. And in a divine energy experience of insecure feeling, we naturally incline toward information that's more judgmental, that's more critical. Or rather, we use information in a critical way because we're living in a lower mood. So again, as in that insecure feeling, that animated feeling of divine energy that is more constricted, there's a feeling of there's something wrong. And we innocently think to ourselves, well, there must be something wrong. What's up with that? Oh, it's because I'm overweight, right? And then in the afternoon, something shifted, her divine energy, her mood, there's a continuous flow of new energy that showed up, and her feeling state lifted. And in that feeling state, she felt lighter, and she looked around and she said, oh, well, what's that coming from? Oh, it's coming from, I've got this blessing and I've got that blessing. Now, what I'm saying is that it's not true. It's not. It's a misunderstanding that the data, the information about our life and our ability to like actively think about that data, that doesn't shape our feeling. That's why it's not enough. Positivity is not just be positive. That's not the key, as far as I see it. The key is divine blessing, but more importantly, the willingness to understand what's true about divine blessing. We are interested in the truth. We're not interested in getting certain feelings and avoiding other feelings. We're interested in the truth about all feelings because we're interested in the truth. That's what our mission as Jews is, to testify to the truth about God's oneness. And that is a liberating endeavor. And it happens to also be a simple endeavor. And it happens to also be an endeavor that we are beautifully suited to accomplish as compared to avoiding certain feelings and getting certain feelings, which as far as I can tell, I am not good at. I don't have the power to do it. And when I think I can and should, I tend to get exhausted and discouraged because, as I see it, it's just not my job. I'm not set up for it. It's a misunderstanding to think that I could. So the question I started off by asking was, what comes first, moods or active thinking? It might look like it's our active thinking, the awareness we have of certain information that shapes our mood. And I would say, no, that's not true. Given the divine energy that we find ourselves in, we incline to relate toward data we incline toward viewing certain data in certain ways. But it's not the data that actually is shaping. It's not the capacity to think of certain information that's shaping our inner feelings. It's the mood itself. It's this kind of beautiful, mysterious, live feed of divine energy showing up in our heart. And the good news is we don't need to manage that live feed. We don't need to. We stick with our job. We take one step after one, put one foot in front of the other, clinging to the mitzvah of emunah, clinging to the mitzvah of lo yeh elocha, of not ascribing power to things other than God. And we thereby reside in the truth. The truth feels uncomfortable at times. Yeah, that's true. I don't know if it's the truth feels uncomfortable. We feel uncomfortable as we're acknowledging the truth. Yep, that's true. We feel warm and fuzzy as we're acknowledging the truth at times. Yes, that's also true. And it's this willingness to have this deep respect for the truth and our capacity to stand in this moment, come what may, come what feeling it elicits, while still acknowledging the truth. And I'm, you know, I love some of these verses just speak to me so deeply, as I've said many times, Kishitale Alecha Ruach HaMoshel, when the spirit of that ruler, the Moshel is the despotic ruler, the one who rules without consent, when the spirit of that ruler comes upon you, Mekoimcha Al Tanach, don't leave your place. Don't run from it. Don't fight it. Stand there, Mekoimcha Al Tanach, your place. And by the way, Makom is Lashon HaMakom. You're standing in the divine. The feelings are the feelings, and they're all safe. They're all divine. They're all safe. I mean, think about it. Going back to the heart analogy, if I were to take a scan of the human circulation system, if I wanted to, I could like zero in with my microscope and find poison flowing through my system. I could see all the CO2. If I could do some kind of an image resonating, I don't know what that's called, where you can like pick up, you know, you can zero in and see a highlighted graphic of things inside your body that are microscopic. If I could do that for all the CO2 and all the other toxins in my body, I might be highly disturbed, you know, like, oh my gosh, look at all that toxin. It's toxin, it's toxin, it's toxin, it's poison, it's poison. There's so much poison. Well, guess what? It's healthy. It's safe. It's all safe. All feelings are, all, the energy that animates all feelings are safe. Therefore, all feelings are safe. It's true we could do destructive things with misunderstanding those feelings, but the feelings themselves are part of a healthy and safe system. And yes, there's discomfort and even great pain associated with the journey that we're living in. But that pain is also a feeling. That pain is also part of a divine system that is wholly healthy and safe. Okay, that is my thought for this morning. And now I welcome the thoughts and contributions or questions of those who are listening.
Hi, Rabbi Harris. Thanks for the recap.
My pleasure.
What just came to me now is that this heart analogy, like the toxin and the healthy blood, like they, I'm sorry, I'm outside, but you probably hear a lot of noise.
No, it's no problem. Keep going.
Okay, great. They coordinate together. Like probably the toxin realizes, like, yeah, I'm just doing my part, but I'm not the whole thing. And the healthy blood realizes, like, this healthy blood is needed, but I'm not going to be here the whole time. At some point, we have to let in the unhealthy blood come. Like, we're a team. So it's like, kind of like, you know, when the painful stuff comes, it's like, yeah, that's temporary. And when the good feelings come, it's like, this is great, thank God, but it's not the whole time either.
Yeah, and at a certain point, we come to appreciate that literally we have no reason to run. Like, it hurts, but it's so safe. It's so okay. There's so much permission. You know, it's so human, this experience. It's almost like there isn't even a hierarchy. I'm not saying that I don't still prefer nice feelings over, you know, unpleasant feelings. I certainly do. But I'm, like, inspired by the idea that there is really, truly no hierarchy, because in God's world, look, I'm not looking to dwell in negative thinking, but I just really get the idea that it's so much, you know, kind of a whole. It's a whole piece.
If I could have clarity while in negative thinking, then for sure, but I tend to not have clarity when I'm in negative thinking.
Well, what, can I ask you a question? Are there times where you don't have clarity in positive thinking?
Yeah, that's true too, because maybe I think, let's say, the positive thinking was by my own doing or by something else. And not
there you go.
So
there you go.
There you go too.
It's if you're viewing it from the perspective of truth and service, the experience of negative feelings is as much an opportunity and a challenge as positive. They're both opportunities. They're both challenges. They're both literally, you know, kind of like places where we could see something true or see something mistaken. And that's, you know, I don't know. I just find that very, very, very interesting.
It's true. The other thing I wanted to say was that, I don't know about you, but I've been getting a lot of, like, scam calls lately. I just don't pick up the phone. But it just came to me, like, just like I'm getting scam calls on my phone, I get a lot of, like, scam stuff. They're like, stuff come to
oh,
me.
Oh, I love that. That's
so
great.
Thank you. I so want to buy into it, and I so want to do whatever it is it's telling me to do. And then I realize, oh, it's a scam thought.
That's great. I love that.
Thank you. Baruch Hashem. And the other thing is that on Shabbos, I had a chance to sit down and read some original works by Rabbi Victor Miller. And I find, like, what he writes just really speaks to me in light of what we're talking about.
Hmm.
It was a book, Sing You Righteous. Anyway, so he says in it that, you know, one of the, a special mitzvah is Hasmeil Alechesh, to walk privately with Hashem. So there, Rabbi Miller says that anytime you have, like, a specifically in the area of thoughts. Anytime you have a thought that comes to you and you know, it's trying to make you do something and you don't bite into it, that's a special holy mitzvah of just walking privately with Hashem, because no one knows what you chose to do in that moment except Hashem. You know, you get this scam phone, the scam thought, and it's telling you to do so much stuff, but it gives you this urgency, and it gives you this, like, you have to do something right now, and no one else knows what you're going through except Hashem, and it only knows what you're doing at that moment. But at the right time, if you're able to do what you believe is the best thing, like, that's such a beautiful thing. That's what Hashem wants us to do, to walk privately with Him. And a lot of times, it just speaks to this area of thought. You just get these thoughts, and here it is, and it's like, who's watching, and no one knows, and I want some kavod, and it's Hashem that's watching. I mean, Hashem gives us these thoughts. Maybe it's a test. But just to know that here you can fulfill such a precious mitzvah.
Oh, wow. That is lovely. That is absolutely lovely. And it's just, you know, it really underscores this notion that the main arena is this inner world, this world in which we're experiencing this kind of unfolding of divine energy inside of us. That's the main world.
Yeah, definitely. And then another thing is that I think I really had a misunderstanding. Here's what I did. And actually, someone very close to me sat me down and told me, like, this isn't cool. Like, you can't do this. So what happened? I would just keep saying, like, oh, it's not your job to take what I say seriously. Like, can't you just see I was in a bad mood? Like, why are you taking it so seriously? Come on. Like, can't you just not, like, think about it? And don't you know I was just, like, saying that in jest, and it was just a whim? And they're like, what do you mean? Like, of course I take you seriously. Like, it's your responsibility to not talk as you, like, to not let me know that. I'm going to take everything you say seriously. And I realized later, like, yeah, maybe it should be my responsibility to, like, realize, like, not expect this person close to me to realize that I'm in a weird mood, so they shouldn't take me seriously. Like, maybe I should kind of, I should be more sensitive to not expecting them to, like, how are they supposed to know whether it is? That's so confusing for them. How are they supposed to know, yes, I'm going to take this 100% seriously, no, that I'm only going to take 50% seriously? Like, that's really confusing for them. And I see with other people, like, here I am, I probably got scammed thoughts at the time, and I said things that later on completely was not MS. What I mean by not MS is that it's what I felt in the moment, but later on I'm like, I don't really feel like that. Like, I just, it was like a weird thing to say. And later on, these people who are close to me are like, oh, this is how you feel. And I'm like, no, it's really not what I want or how I feel. And they're like, well, why did you tell me that? And it's because in the moment I had this, like, scam thought that was like, you got to say this. So so it's kind of like, and in the beginning, learning innate health, I thought, like, oh, I love the fact that we're not taking stuff so seriously, but other people don't think like they're not walking around with that understanding.
Yes.
They're kind of just like, I'm going to take what you say seriously because you're telling me that, so I'm going to believe it.
Right,
so,
right. That's right.
So then,
well, that's
if someone
good.
Had to
and
send me that and be like, yeah.
There, now, notice the generous feeling that there is in that description, you know, that you're not looking to place that burden on people. Why should I burden them with the ability to filter or, you know, like, I'm interested in my contribution to a relationship dynamic. It's true that they have the capacity to live inside of a healthy, safe space, independent of what you're saying, you know, how you're acting. But you don't need them to see and live in that space, you know. That itself is a, like, your interest in your contribution and how you land with people is itself a reflection of a certain generosity of spirit, you know, a certain striving, a certain healthy kind of aspiration. You know, there's a generosity in that approach, and that's beautiful.
You mean on my part?
Yeah, exactly. Like, in other words, you know, look, there's no shortage of people that are walking around with complaints in the type of scenario you're describing. Why does he have to take things so personally? And doesn't he understand that it's not my words that are, you know, shaping his feelings, and can't, you know, whatever, you know what I'm saying? Like, that's one of the, you know, that can be a phenomenon of, you know, what happens when people start to see something about these principles is that they can say, oh, I guess, you know, I don't have to take my thoughts so to heart, and then unconsciously kind of hold others to that expectation. But, you know, the implication of seeing this for ourselves is when we look to really accept responsibility for both our understanding of our own inner world and how we show up with others.
Right. Well, I would think, thanks for the compliment. I would love to be a generous spirit and not expect others to have to take me seriously. I mean, I'm not expect others to filter my thoughts and know when to take me seriously, when to not, but I'm not perfect, and there's going to be times when I innocently fall into my scam thoughts, and I'm going to say things that I probably won't want to be held to later, and
yep.
Probably they'll take that seriously, and
yep.
Then I'll just have to let them know, like, actually, it's not that way.
Yeah, or even just to, you know, to accept their, you know, like, because what can happen, you know, this is this whole, like, you know, I use this word codependency. It sounds fancy and significant, and I don't see it as fancy and significant. I feel that it's just simply a kind of a description of states of mind that we might find ourselves in. But there can be a feeling like a codependent feeling, like I'm in a relationship with somebody, and I express, you know, myself in a way that they feel hurt by, right? But then I'm bothered by the fact that they were hurt by my way of interacting with them, and I kind of resent the fact that, hey, why are you laying that on my plate? You know, why are you like, you're acting as if I caused your hurt. I resent the fact that you are saying that I caused your, you know, it's like, and then we just get into this kind of like dynamic, and even, you know, if we say words or if we do things that a person feels hurt. They associate our actions and our words with hurt. Maybe we did things that were insensitive. Maybe we did it. Maybe they took our words and actions in a way that was deeply personal, and we didn't mean it. Either way, the ability to see this wisdom and to stand in it would include, I guess, like a certain forbearance. You know, in Hebrew we would say savlanus, like a certain, you know, like, here they are yelling at me that I acted insensitively, and I'm looking to reaffirm the truth that I know that my inner world is safe and there's nothing going on out there that's shaping it, so I can stand here. I can stand here and acknowledge their pain, even as they're accusing me. Here they are, they're accusing me. You did this, and now I feel this, and I don't like that. If, you know, a wonderful measure of my seeing it is to be able to stand with them in their pain, acknowledge that they feel the pain that they feel, and, you know, and they're accusing me of the pain, of being the source of their pain on whatever level they're accusing me. And I can stand in that and acknowledge, okay, your pain matters to me, and I'm clear, or I have some recognition that I don't need you to think of me in a certain way in order for me to be, you know, standing in the divine energy.
Interesting. I hadn't thought of it that way. Probably at the time they sat me down, I was like, didn't have a clear head anyway.
And sure.
It just didn't come to me. But it's funny because now as we're talking about it, I feel great. I'm in such a light mood that I almost want to, like, fast forward over this part because it's, like, this is so nitty-gritty and, like, whatever. So we took it a little too seriously and, okay, that's fine. Like, it's funny because where I am now, it's, like, okay. You know, that was, like, a little magnified incident. But from where I am now, it's, like, doesn't bother me. Whatever, we'll move on.
Yes. Beautiful.
And, but that's, I guess that's life.
Yep.
And I did have a question I wanted to ask.
Okay.
Which is that, so I know we always talk about Yetzias Mitzrayim, that's the precedent and the pattern going from Golus to Geula. And we talk about the birth pangs of literally having a child, that we have the pain, but then we give birth to something. And I know that the reason why there's pain for having a child is because of Chava's sin.
Yep.
So my question was, I don't know if anyone on the world can answer this, but if Chava didn't have this, if she didn't do the fate and there was no pain involved with having a child, would that change the fabric of Yetzias Mitzrayim, and we also wouldn't be slaves before being freed?
Well, listen, this is certainly entering into a realm that I'm not sure I'm, you know, so capable of speaking on, because it's kind of a mystical realm. Like, what would have happened, basically, if I'm understanding your question,
mm-hmm.
what would have been the world in human experience had Adam and Chava not made their mistake?
That's a whole other thing.
What's that?
Right, yeah, okay, so that's just like a whole other reality.
Well, yeah, I mean, they would have ushered in, you know, Olam Haba, you know what I'm saying? Like, there would have been that would have been kind of the story of human journey, the journey of the human learning experience would have come to its fruition, and we would just be sitting and experiencing eternity with the Almighty, you know? So, I don't know. I don't know, I guess is what I would say. I don't know if Yetzias Mitzrayim was part of a world in which there wasn't that the need for the tikkun, you know, like I
right. I guess the implication of what I'm saying is, you know, till now I thought, you know, the pain before the birth, that's just like neutral, you know, some meant that there's pain, and then at one moment there's pain, next moment there's birth, but when I understand it as the pain is a punishment, well, really a tikkun from Chava, so I guess you could say really any pain is neutral, but it's also, like, first I thought, oh my gosh, it's a shame, it's a punishment. The pain was a punishment from Chava that we have to go through, but I guess now you could say it's a tikkun. It's everything's really,
yeah.
You could say every pain is really just a tikkun. And
yes.
And even the pain of Egypt, I guess that was a tikkun that Abraham lacked a little bit in Emunah. I guess that,
yep.
That we were slaves is a tikkun for that. So I guess you could say really any pain is a tikkun.
Yes. 100%. Certainly the notion of punishment that we've come to associate with that word is really foreign from Jewish teachings. You know, we don't have punitive ideas.
Right,
there is such a thing as an onish in a punishment in the Torah, but the notion of the punishment is it's purely corrective. It's purely spiritual correction.
Right.
It's elevation. And does it involve discomfort or pain? Yeah, it does, but in no way is it independent of a divine loving process, you know, and that's obviously something that we don't always see, but that is the spiritual paradigm. There's no question that childbirth and the pain associated with it is a deep and loving process of correction that we misunderstand, the same way that we misunderstand the contractions of our lives insofar as we are all giving birth. Every one of us, our primary children in this world, are our good choices. We are all involved, men, women, everybody are giving birth, and there's by nature contractions in that growth and, you know, experience. It's all the most kind and profound pathway to the most rich and beautiful place we could ever hope for. So it's a tremendous kindness of the Almighty that we have that design.
Yeah, I just for me it's like a little bit weird to understand doing a kapara or like a tikkun for something that we personally didn't do. I mean, maybe it does atone for stuff we did do, but I'm saying if Chava did the sin and now all women are having pain with childbirth, that's on a literal mentality, but the same with everything. It's like, okay, so it's the idea of a tikkun is very healing and therapeutic, but it's like in that case it's for something that we personally didn't do.
Well, good news though, you not only bear the challenge of the tikkun associated with Chava's choices, you also carry the extraordinary spiritual light that Chava was blessed with, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like we are all part of this kind of, you know. And again, these are ideas that are kind of beyond my grasp in a certain sense, but we're all called part of the original, you know, Adam Hashalem. You know, we're all part of this extraordinary being. We should know that we are caretakers of a spiritual light that was part of Adam and Chava. So yeah, we have their tikkun, but it's not like we don't also have their extraordinary gifts.
Wow. Thank you. That's really powerful to know.
Baruch Hashem.
That's really powerful to know.
Yeah, it's a good deal. Not a bad deal.
I think the pain gets more PR than effort.
Right. 100%.
But really, I'm sure in God's eyes, it's all the same love anyway. But down here, it's just nice to know that there's the light part also.
Yeah. Beautiful. Anybody else? Anybody else have a comment or a question or thought to share? I didn't mean to cut you off, Leora. I don't know if you have something else you wanted to say.
No, that was excellent. Thank you. That was it.
Good. Beautiful. Okay, well, I'm going to then say I wish everyone a beautiful week and a good Shabbos, and I look forward to the opportunity again next week.